This is the Take a Hike segment of the Zesty Garden. I have with me David Wallace, who's a leader with Cache Hikers and on the board of the Utah Native Plant Society. And one of the hikes that is done so often around here, but there's still so many people, David, that I run into that have not been to Tony Grove when the wildflowers are out. So now is the time to do that.
Yes. I lived in Salt Lake for a while, and then August was the big wildflower month. But here up in northern Utah, July, and this is the time you want to be there.
So what are you going to find at Tony Grove? This is, of course, you've got the lake. You can park really close. In fact, if you never want to get out of your vehicle, you could just look up onto the hillside and see quite a bit. But I would advise getting out.
Well, since we're talking about hiking, this is not really a hike, more of a walk. But I want to talk about the Tony Grove Nature Trail. This is a developed trail with interpretive signs and boardwalks that runs around the north end of Tony Grove Lake for maybe half a mile.
So disabled access?
Yeah, but I have to tell you this, that the boardwalks that they put in are these composite ones, and they look like a roller coaster in some places.
Gotcha. So be ready.
Be ready for that. I'm sure they intended it for disabled access. The reason I want to talk about this now is because there are some flowers there that are some of my absolute favorites. And the one I'm going to start with is Pedicularis greenlandica, the elephant's head. Now, I first knew elephant's head from the Uinta Mountains. It grows all over the place in the high meadows. But here in northern Utah, we don't see it very often. And this is one of the fortunate places that we have there along the nature trail.
So where do they get elephant's head if that means Greenland or lousewort?
Well, the name lousewort comes from the olden days when the superstitious farmers thought that the presence of lousewort in the fields would cause their animals to become infested with the lice. That's, of course, a myth. But they had funny-looking flowers, so maybe they look like bugs to somebody. So that may have triggered that belief. And Greenlandica, just because it's named for Greenland, I'm sure it's found there. It's found around a lot of the areas of the northern hemisphere.
And I see from your notes that it's in the snapdragon family?
Yes, the Scrophulariaceae, the snapdragon family. A lot of more interesting shaped flowers we have are in that family.
And how tall are they? What kind of color will you see with those?
Well, they grow about a foot tall, and they're a purple colored. They only grow in wet, moist areas. And so this is one of the nice things about the Tony Grove Nature Trail. There's some water that comes in from the north edge, and you'll find it in the moist areas. There's a few other places around in the area, but that's a guaranteed spot to identify this plant.
And I'm guessing from the name elephant that it looks like it's an elephant?
It's absolutely fascinating. It looks like an elephant. It has ears and a long, curly trunk that comes up around. And what's really interesting is that this is a result of coevolution between bumblebees and the flower. By mutual evolution, they've changed, adapted to each other to where they aid pollination.
And so what is the bee doing? What does it look like when a bee flies to this flower?
Well, there's no nectar, which is interesting. The bumblebee comes up and grabs a hold of the flower, and to hang on, it grabs it with its mouth parts and its feet, and it has to fly to keep on buzzing to stay attached. And as it buzzes, this elephant's trunk comes up behind and pokes the bee right in the middle of the back, and it picks up pollen that might be there from another. That's where the female part, the anther, is. And then it also releases a bunch of pollen, which dusts the bee as it buzzes. So the bee picks up a load of pollen, which it uses for food, and at the same time, it pollinates the flower.
So how cool is this? This bee must really want that particular pollen. I mean, it's learned that it's, I don't know, a little. There's more to it, or why go through all the trouble?
Well, you probably ought to ask an entomologist about some of these details. But I do know that the bees visit other flowers, and other different bees visit these. But this is a specialized relationship between the genus of the multiple species of the bumblebee and this particular flower.
And what an adaptation! Because how many flowers are going to have something that sticks out and touches the back of the bee? So maybe he's already been at the one, and there's some specks of pollen on the back, and picks it up and flies off to the next one.
Well, it's even more interesting than that, because where it pokes the bee is right in the middle of its back, where it has a hard time cleaning the pollen, just like you have a hard time scratching yourself in the middle of the back. So the bees get pollen all over. When they visit the plant, their hairs are covered with the sticky pollen, and then they comb it into little sacks on their feet. Well, they can't get that part in the middle very good, and so when it goes to another flower, there's pollen ready for pollination.
Okay, that's pretty neat. And this flower is about itself, the flower is what?
It's only about a half an inch long. It's on a tall, about a foot tall spike, with these whole stack of these little purple flowers up and down it.
Okay, sounds pretty neat. What's our next favorite flower in this area?
Well, while you're there, you'll see another one of my favorites. This is the white bog orchid. It's not really spectacular to look at. It's it grows in the same swampy areas.
And is it a true orchid?
It is a true orchid.
Okay.
It has a hollow green stem and these little white flowers that are kind of interesting. They have little long petals. The scientific name refers to the strap shape of the petals. Apparently, this is pollinated by moths, and it attracts them by scent. Now, I have to tell you that I should probably be more aware of this, but I did not kneel down in the bog and sniff these things. I wouldn't recommend it there because you'd leave the trail, you'd cause some damage. But it's supposed to be quite fragrant. And one of the names for this, besides white bog orchid, which doesn't sound real good, it's called the scent bottle. So probably because of the fragrance.
And you'll see this in the same place as you would see the elephant head?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And the third plant I'd like to talk about is a little bit more widespread, but it also grows there, not quite as moist of areas, but in the shady, cool areas of our mountains. And this is an interesting name because it's the blue columbine. The blue columbine is the Colorado state flower, and it is blue, at least the sepals are blue, the petals are white. And in the columbines, the sepals look like petals. So if you look at the columbine, it has these flat petals with spurs with the nectaries in them, and then alternating between the petals are the five sepals that are colored in Colorado, at least. Here in Utah, they're white. And there's a gradation of color between Colorado and Utah, and in the high Uintas, when I'm in the eastern high Uintas, I see these pale blue columbines. It's really interesting.
So any reason why the adaptation for white versus the blue?
Well, that goes back to pollination again. It's thought that that's an adaptation for moths. Moths go by smell and not so much by color, and so the spurs get longer to accommodate the mouth part of the moths, and the color disappears because it's not necessary, I guess.
So they're not pollinated as much by moths in Colorado as they are in Utah.
That's my understanding.
Wow. Okay. I really like that kind of information when I'm looking at my flowers. And this is another one that grows in shady, moist areas in the mountains.
It's not quite as moist as the other two. You'll see this in meadows, under trees, and shady, but it's always a cooler area and a little bit moister than the open slopes.
I know I've seen it on the hike to White Pine Lake.
It grows. There's a lot there. In fact, that's the day that I looked at this recently. Of course, I saw it on the nature trail, but I also went on the White Pine Lake trail a little bit, and found it inside a clump of trees, a really nice stand of it.
Let's talk about the trail itself. There's a large parking lot. Services as far as having toilets are readily available. There is a fee for parking. How much is that?
Well, it's $6 now, but first let's talk about how you get there.
Okay.
Okay. If you start at Logan, you drive up Highway 89 towards Yellowstone in Bear Lake. About 20 miles, you'll near, I think it's mile marker 481, excuse me. There's a road that goes to the left, heads up toward the west. That's the Tony Grove Road. About 7 miles, you follow that and come to a parking lot at the end, and that's where you'll pay your fee, and you can walk around the lake if you wish. You can use the restrooms and so on.
There's a large pullout off of US 89 for snowmobilers. That might be an indication. There is a sign, but if you get to the Red Bank Campground, then you've gone too far to
right.
Turn around and go back.
And when you first take the road off from Highway 89, you'll immediately turn to the south. If you go straight west, you'll go to another campground. It'll be obvious, though.
Okay, so once you get to the parking lot, you parked, paid your fee, where do you go?
Okay, at the west end of the parking lot, this is the opposite end you entered, there are three trails that start. One is a real short one that goes to some picnic tables. Another one heads off towards White Pine Lake. This is the one on the right, heads off toward White Pine Lake and Naomi Peak. And the one in the middle is the nature trail. And you know right away that you're on the nature trail because within 100 yards you'll be arriving at one of these displays with the interpretive sign on it.
And are those all around the lake, these interpretive displays?
The nature trail only goes about a half a mile.
Okay.
It's just around the north end. There's multiple interpretive signs, and it circles through some dry meadow area and then sagebrush meadow and then into the wet areas, and it comes back into the dry again, and it comes back down towards the lake, and that's it. You can go back if you're if you've seen all you care to, or you can hike around the lake for a 1 mile hike, and you have many other options as well in that area.
As far as being available for the disabled all the way around the lake, that might be, I don't think you can get in a wheelchair all the way around, but.
No, I haven't hiked it recently all the way around, but I don't think so. However, they did improve the trail a few years ago when they rebuilt the dam. Since they rebuilt the dam, I've not walked around it, but from what I see from the parking lot, it looks like it's in good shape. But I would be careful if I'm not completely confident of going out there with a wheelchair unless and be prepared to take some other options.
And how much time would you spend just to make sure you have enough to see everything?
Oh, this is entirely dependent on you, I'd say. If you have little kids that are interested, you might spend an hour on the first half mile, or you could walk around the whole thing within less than an hour if you weren't stopping too much. I guess it's pretty flexible.
And given the lack of snow cover this year and moisture, these flowers are out right now. Usually, some years it's been several weeks later.
I'd say that July, the first week in July, is when we used to go up to do some wildflower walks, and it's pretty good for the whole month. Some species will be coming and going. The ones I talked about, I think, will be there for most of July.
Okay.
I want to point out, if you're taking this other hike, the whole area. The herbarium here at Utah State University on their webpage has a checklist. So you can go there and download this list of all the plants that are available.
And we have that at our website at upr.org. So this sounds like a great hike, and this is at Tony Grove. We've got three species of flowers we've talked about, the elephant head flower, the white bog orchid, and the blue or Colorado columbine. David, thanks for coming in.
Thanks.
This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1, 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1, 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1, 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1, 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1, 91.5 Logan.